It is Friday, September the 2nd. This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us. Coming up, the latest on the U.S. presidential race. Brazil's president ousted in favor of her vice president.
Many on the left believe that this was an undemocratic pseudo-coup and are unlikely to accept that Temer as the country's legitimate president, engaging in protests and generally trying to obstruct his government's process.
Also ahead, expectations from human rights groups regarding President Obama's Asia trip, plus singer Chris Brown in trouble again. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump left little doubt about his tough stand on illegal immigration during a speech in Arizona this week. Some moderate Republicans had hoped for a softening of Trump's immigration position, which polls have shown has hurt him with minority voters. But Trump appears to be doubling down on his vow to protect the U.S. border from Mexico. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has our report.
For Donald Trump, a renewed aggressive focus on his key issue of stopping illegal immigration at a time when some Republicans were looking for a softer tone.
For those here illegally today who are seeking legal status, they will have one route and one route only: to return home and apply for reentry like everybody else. We will break the cycle of amnesty and illegal immigration. We will break the cycle.
Trump unveiled a 10-point immigration plan aimed at stopping illegal entry and deporting criminal elements. He repeated his vow that Mexico will pay for a new wall along the southern border. Trump's tone during the speech was noticeably tougher than it was hours earlier after a meeting with Mexico's President Enrique Peña Nieto. Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton continues to hammer away at Trump's temperament and warns voters about Trump's efforts to moderate his image.
And now Trump is trying to rebrand himself as well. But don't be fooled. There's an old Mexican proverb that says, "Tell me with whom you walk, and I will tell you who you are." But we know who Trump is.
Clinton continues to lead Trump in national and key state polls, and Trump is finding it difficult to broaden his base of support beyond Republican primary voters, says Georgetown University analyst Stephen Wayne.
Because he appealed to an angry segment, a segment of the Republican Party, which is not necessarily the country as a whole. This general election seems to be a referendum for or against Trump. And he won it in the primaries, and he's losing it in the general election because of the very appeals he made in the primaries.
But some recent polls show the race tightening, in part because many voters do not trust Clinton, says Professor Jeremy Mayer.
Hillary Clinton has massive flaws, and had the Republicans nominated a typical Republican, not a Reagan too, but just your average politician, it'd probably be neck and neck right now, given her vulnerabilities.
With 2 months to go until the election, the next major test for both candidates will be the presidential debates, which begin later this month. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
And among the other stories we're staying on top of, Facebook's satellite was destroyed when an unmanned U.S. rocket blew up. India's leader on a state visit to Vietnam, plus post-election violence in Gabon. We'll have expanded coverage of those stories a lot more at our website, voanews.com, and as always on the VOA mobile app. New Brazilian President Michel Temer, that is, has appealed for national unity in wake of this week's Senate conviction of his impeached and suspended predecessor, Dilma Rousseff.
Assumo a presidência do Brasil após decisão democrática e transparente.
Mr. Temer described the congressional action as transparent and democratic. He called it a moment of hope to reclaim confidence in Brasil. It is a time, he said, to unite and put the national interests above group interest. The Senate vote of 61 to 20 ended the presidency of the country's first female leader who was convicted of violating budgetary laws to enhance her 2014 re-election prospects. It also ends 13 years of rule by the Workers' Party. Some observers say it puts in jeopardy some of the social welfare programs, which Rousseff argues have lifted millions out of poverty. She called her removal a parliamentary coup and maintained her innocence. Mark Jones is a Latin American expert at Rice University. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty, despite Mr. Temer's lofty rhetoric, the nation is deeply divided. It's also mired in recession and facing a host of challenges.
First, the Brazilian economy is deep in the doldrums. Second, many on the left believe that this was an undemocratic pseudo-coup and are unlikely to accept Temer as the country's legitimate president, engaging in protests and generally trying to obstruct his government's process. And perhaps most seriously is that there's a cloud of corruption hanging over the Temer government. Several accusations of direct corruption by Temer himself and half of his cabinet facing legal charges presently.
Were you surprised by the lopsided vote, 61-20, to remove Ms. Rousseff from office permanently?
Not all that surprised. We knew that there was going to be support for her in the PT. But I think what generally happened is once many Brazilian politicians who were on the fence saw that it was going to be a clear-cut impeachment, they wanted to be in the good graces of the government in order to receive financial benefits or political benefits. And that could be bridges in their and roads in their states or jobs for their supporters. And so once it was pretty clear that the president was going to be impeached, many of the senators started to move to the government side, and thus very few people who were on the fence, say, 6 to 8 weeks ago, shifted for the president, and pretty much all of them went on the impeachment side for the vote.
But the Senate also voted more narrowly to allow Ms. Rousseff to retain the right to hold public office. Could she run again?
I don't think we'll be seeing her at least running for president any time in the future. She could always run for Senate, replicating President Fernando Collor de Mello, who was impeached back in the 90s, but then returned later to run and be elected a senator. He, though, was prohibited from holding public office for a period of time.
Mr. Temer faces a number of challenges, as you indicated. He's going to be in office at least through 2018. He has an agenda that includes privatization and reforms. This will go against 13 years of Worker Party rule. How likely is this going to play out?
Well, he should be able to get much of these reforms passed, in part because the Brazilian system is very open to negotiation. And one thing that we do know about President Temer is that he's an expert negotiator. He honed his skills as Speaker of the Brazilian lower house. And so one place where he does really shine compared to President Rousseff is that he knows how to negotiate and get things done. She was always criticized for being overly autocratic and overly sensitive and too willing to cut people off and not sit down and negotiate. Temer is all the opposite.
Mark Jones, Latin American expert at Rice University, speaking with my colleague, Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
This is VOA's International Edition. Human rights activists are urging President Obama to put China's human rights record high on the agenda of his upcoming meetings with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Two leaders will be holding one-on-one talks on the sidelines of the Group of 20 Nations summit in the eastern Chinese city of Guangzhou starting on Sunday. In previous talks, Mr. Obama has repeatedly spoken to Mr. Xi about U.S. concerns with perceived human rights abuses in China. One group that hopes the U.S. leader will do so again is the U.S.-based Human Rights First. My colleague Michael Lippin spoke with the group's Senior Counsel for Foreign Affairs, Daphne Aviatar, in New York, for the VOA China 360 podcast. He asked Aviatar what she thinks of how Obama has handled recent Chinese moves, such as Beijing's detention of human rights defenders and its passage of a law restricting the activities of foreign NGOs.
The administration has made a few statements. John Kerry, certainly when he was in China, made some statements about the NGO law and raised some concerns. But none of these have been very strong, and we haven't seen any actual actions that seem to have made a difference. I mean, it is helpful. There was a joint statement issued by a group of countries a few months ago about China, and I think those kind of joint actions are helpful, and we are encouraging President Obama to work with other G20 countries to raise these issues. But we'd like to see something more because the trend seems to be accelerating. The human rights situation seems to be getting worse. There's a lot of concern among people locally that in advance of the G20 meeting, people are being rounded up and expelled from Hangzhou, and that people will be at risk, even at a greater level of risk, because of the meeting. And so it's important for President Obama to really make a very public statement about the fact that this is not acceptable, and also to make an effort to meet with local civil society when he's there. It's difficult because there are some people who probably would be afraid to meet with him just because of security concerns, but there are others that I think probably would be willing to take that risk, and he should at least make that effort because it makes a big statement of support for human rights activists there.
Why do you think President Obama hasn't, up to now, been tougher with China and made these more kind of explicit statements along the lines of what you think he should say? What could be holding him back, do you think?
Well, it's a sensitive relationship. Certainly there's the controversy over the South China Sea, and that's been something that the United States has been very concerned about. President Xi is very sensitive to criticism, seems quite defensive. You know, obviously these are sensitive issues, but that's why we think raising these issues in coalition with other countries and making it clear that economic cooperation is dependent upon meeting certain standards of human rights and meeting certain standards of international law is very important.
That was Daphne Aviatar of Human Rights First speaking with International Edition's Michael Lippin. For more of their conversation, including what Aviatar thinks of China's habit of responding to foreign criticism by pointing out human rights problems in other countries, check out Michael's VOA China 360 podcast on our website, voanews.com. You can do that by clicking on the Listen tab at the top of the screen, then selecting our broadcast programs and scrolling down to the bottom of the page. American auto manufacturers are trying to figure out how to adapt to the accelerating pace of change as the U.S. population ages, technology improves, and societal expectations evolve. VOA's Jim Randall reports now from Dearborn, Michigan, that the Ford Motor Company is employing a futurist to draw a clearer picture of what is coming up.
So this is going to be a battle between nature versus nurture.
Drawing pictures helps Ford's futurist Cheryl Connolly sort through blizzards of information that may shape the future transportation marketplace.
It helps me get to synthesizing the information and distilling it and trying to see if I can come up with an insight. So those images I do for myself.
She makes illustrations and takes notes as she looks beyond the auto industry and wonders about the ever more connected world, the growing middle class in emerging economies, expectations that technology will make life better, and environmental worries. Researchers say some new ideas include making plastic car parts out of wheat straw, tomato stems, trees, soybeans, captured carbon dioxide, and all kinds of other things instead of traditional petroleum. Sometimes they develop a lighter auto part and a more fuel-efficient car.
We are trying to use different renewable-based materials to make it foam materials, to get more green content or sustainable content in our applications.
Connolly says fuel efficiency and sustainability are a growing challenge for auto manufacturers.
As we add more and more people to the planet, I mean, they say 8 billion within the next 10 years. And so consumption will have to be redefined. Prosperity will be rethought. And I think this is why we're moving to this service-oriented, access-oriented marketplace, so that those people that can't afford a car still need mobility.
Environmentally friendly shared ride services are under development by Ford and others. This shuttle service is controlled by a smartphone app. Sharing a vehicle accommodates the growing number of customers who see transportation as a service they can rent to get them from place to place, rather than as a vehicle they must buy, repair, fuel, and park. Shared vehicles could be a cheap alternative for emerging markets and an efficient one for crowded wealthy countries. Some experts predict that shared vehicles, self-driving cars, and other changes could make more efficient use of vehicles and drastically cut demand for cars. Connolly says such concerns make some in the auto industry and elsewhere fear the future because it is easier to imagine all the ways things can go wrong than to imagine how they could all go right. Jim Randall, VOA News, Dearborn, Michigan.
And now it is time to find out what's happening on social media. International Edition's Lori London here with the latest. Lori, what's on the minds of all those social media types?
Well, the big hurricane as Florida gears up for the first hurricane to make landfall in that state in 11 years on a holiday weekend, no less. Hashtag Hurricane Hermine is trending on Twitter. Now, the NASA Space Agency says Hurricane Hermine spotted from space shows the storm completely blanketing the entire state of Florida. Someone with the handle Narcasm writes, why almost name a storm after a Harry Potter character? That's like naming it Hurricane Voldort. Now, they're referring to Hermione and Voldemort in the popular series.
Hermine, Hermione,
right.
I don't get it.
Who knows how they come up with these names?
Who knows? Yeah.
And then we've got a little sarcasm from someone who with the handle at Melissa in Jax, meaning Jacksonville, Florida. She writes, it's now hashtag Hurricane Hermine. You may all now officially start freaking out.
And they probably are, aren't they? Huh? I guess at least one or two of them
are. I'm sure.
Anything else out there folks are talking about?
Well, absolutely. A Twitter war between Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto following his brief visit there on Wednesday. For some background, at a news conference after their meeting, Donald Trump was asked if he spoke to Peña Nieto about paying for that wall, and Trump said they hadn't discussed. Then later in the evening, in a speech on immigration in Arizona, Trump said, we are building a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. And then he said it again. They don't know it yet, but they will pay for it. So then he tweeted, Mexico will pay for the wall. Well, after the speech, the Mexican president responded in a tweet of his own. And this is a translation, by the way. Mm-hmm. It said, at the beginning of our conversation with Mr. Trump, I clearly stated that we will not pay for the wall. Now, the publication at Daily Beast tweeted, that was fast. Donald Trump and Enrique Peña Nieto are officially feuding on Twitter. The Mexican leader's been getting a lot of flack for his invitation to Trump from his citizens there, given some of the disparaging comments Trump has made. So Peña Nieto tweeted in Spanish, "Why did I get together with Donald Trump?" But as Donald Trump then doubled down with another tweet saying Mexico will pay for the wall 100%, Peña Nieto then tweeted, "I repeat, what I said personally to Mr. Trump, Mexico will never pay for the wall." So, Steve, it looks like the beginning of a beautiful relationship.
It seems like it. I'm sure they'll be getting together often.
That's it for today.
Yeah, indeedy. Many thanks, Lori. International Edition's Lori London. By the way, you can follow Lori on Twitter at Lori London. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Hydropower dams along the Mekong River have been managing water and supplying electricity from China to the southern tip of Vietnam for years. Now, another dam is on the way in Laos, to the concern of many. Niwat Raikayu is the founder of the Chiang Kong Conservation Group.
Because dams...
He says the dam changes everything. The ecology, the water levels, it's a big problem. Others argue, though, that the Don Sahong Dam will supply much-needed revenue to Laos and electricity to Thailand and Vietnam. Rivers International campaigner Pien Point Dietz says the river needs to be regulated.
Not as a, like each section owned by different companies.
Tens of millions of farmers and fishermen and transporters rely on the Mekong River for their livelihoods. But conservationists say fish catches could drop in half, with Vietnam and Cambodia losing $1 billion in fishing and farming business. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexiou.
This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks all of you for joining us today. You know, it turns out that Chris Brown is in trouble with the law again, this time for allegedly pointing a gun at a woman at a party at his home in Tarzana, California. International Edition's David Byrd speaks with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about all of this, which has cost Brown $250,000 in bail, but it's not clear as clear-cut as you might think.
He was having a party. He had some folks over, and apparently two young ladies showed up uninvited. Bailey Karam was one of these young ladies. She's the regional California beauty contestant. And she says that another one of his friends pulled out jewelry. I guess they were selling jewelry, and she happened to walk by and pointed at a piece and said, "Hey, that was really nice." And I guess that upset the man who was showing the jewelry, a couple of the other gentlemen that were in the house, and Chris lost it, she alleges. Again, he pointed the gun. She ran out, and immediately after running out of the house, she called police, and they brought what looked like a quarter of the force to Chris Brown's home, which is in a very sort of ritzy, rich, affluent neighborhood in Hollywood, and attempted to get in, and Chris would not let them in because they did not have a search warrant, which I think is important to say is well within his right.
Under the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution, illegal search and seizure is not allowed. If the police want to search your crib, they have to have a warrant that says why they're searching it and what they're looking for.
Right. And what was also very interesting was that while what the media was calling a standoff was going on, Chris Brown was inside releasing Instagram videos, social media videos, and sort of explaining his side of the story. And his side of the story was, "They're always bothering me. They won't let me live. I didn't do anything. I'm not going to let them in until I get a warrant." And later on, that eventually happened, and they arrested him. And $250,000 is what it cost him in bail to be released. And right now, Bailey Karam has yet to file charges. She has, however, spoken to quite a few media outlets, including TMZ, to tell her side of the story. And as a result, they started to dig within her past, and her credibility is being called into question because in 2014, she was involved in a grand theft larceny case in New York City where she was accused of stealing a handbag, money, and a wallet.
Part of this, though, is Chris Brown has a reputation. This is not his first dust-up with law enforcement.
Absolutely. And I would think part of what would make one hope that he wasn't involved with something like this also is the fact that he has that reputation. Now, some folks were asking, as we were reporting, it on VOA 1, whether or not this would violate his probation, because he was on probation for many years for the abuse of Rihanna. He is no longer on probation. So this will be a separate case. And Chris Brown actually spent some time in jail because he continued to violate that probation. So though that will not be called into question when this whole thing goes to court and he's arraigned, as you say, I mean, when you have a history of violence against women, it doesn't look very good for you. Let's just say that.
And what did Chris do about all this? Well, other than delete the Instagram posts of his videos, he dropped some new music in putting it on SoundCloud called What Would You Do? To follow Shauna on Twitter, she is at VOA Lady DJ, and you can also check her out at the Soul Lounge on our website. That's voanews.com. And you can send her a tweet by sending it to at VOA1 The Hits.
Yes, indeedy. Many thanks, Dave. International Edition's David Byrd. And many thanks to you as well, Shauna Renee. Always good to have you on the program. Well, it turns out that singers Kelly Price and Estelle will be joining comedian and television host Steve Harvey, civil rights leader Reverend Al Sharpton, and the fitness expert, you know him, Sean T, at the inaugural Essence Festival in Durban, South Africa. Organizers made that announcement. The event is in November. As the sisters' event, it is right in line with the Essence Festival that goes on in New Orleans here in the U.S. Well, down in Durban, they'll also have local performers from that region, record producers, including DJ Black Coffee. He's big down there. Also, actress and singer Nondumiso Temba, Big News, and Babes Wodumo. Oh, very special appearances, other ones to be announced soon, they tell us. Listen, thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is gravely concerned about specific accusations of abuse and torture that were made during the trial of 23 persons arrested following June 29th riots in Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania. The arrest followed a protest against eviction by residents of a squatter camp in the capital, many of whom are former slaves. The protest turned violent when demonstrators threw stones and burned a police bus. 9 police and other Mauritanian citizens were injured. The United States condemns the serious injuries and associated property damage. The United States is concerned with reports of coerced confessions or statements obtained through torture, raising serious concerns as to whether each accused individual received a fair trial. The U.S. will closely follow an anticipated appeal process. Among those sentenced are 13 members of the Resurgence of Abolitionist Movement, an organization championing the anti-slavery movement in Mauritania. Mauritania was the last country in the world to officially abolish slavery in 1981. Nevertheless, slavery continues in the West African nation, where an estimated 4 to 20% of Mauritania's 3.5 million people are enslaved. The United States urges an immediate and comprehensive investigation into all credible allegations of torture, public release of findings of this investigation, and appropriate prosecution of any individuals whom the investigation finds were responsible for such acts. Mauritania enshrined its commitment against torture by characterizing it as a crime against humanity in the 2012 revision of the Mauritanian Constitution, and in April of this year established in law the National Mechanism for the Prevention of Torture, which has been partially staffed but not fully funded. The United States strongly encourages Mauritania to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms, including freedoms of expression and association for all Mauritanians. The U.S. supports fair trial guarantees, transparent and credible judicial processes, and respect for the human rights of all individuals.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's for what?